This is hurting not only American companies and the American economy, but it's hurting the global economy as well.
Trade is currently at the center of the China-U.S. relationship. It's Thursday, August 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Japan prepares for North Korean missiles. Heat deep in the earth is rising in Australia. Philippines evaluates Chinese encroachment. Prosthetics you can feel. A cell phone with no battery. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump's recent decision to launch an investigation into concerns about market access in China and the theft of American intellectual property, either through hacking or opaque policies and regulations that force companies to hand over trade secrets, has Beijing warning of a possible trade war. Others, however, say it's about time China got a wake-up call. For years, intellectual property theft and policies regarding market access in China have been a point of concern, not only for the United States, but for other foreign companies investing there. Robert Atkinson is president of the Washington, D.C.-based Information Technology and Innovation Foundation.
It's clear that in many areas, Chinese policy is violating the spirit, if not the letter, of the WTO. And, you know, the Chinese government doesn't show any signs of backing down or changing their behavior. This is hurting not only American companies and the American economy, but it's hurting the global economy as well, because when you do that, there's less innovation.
Trump administration officials estimate theft of intellectual property could be as much as $600 billion. Atkinson adds that when you take Europe and other countries into account, the losses are even bigger. And while it is still too early to tell how the investigation will play out, the announcement has Beijing on edge. Chinese state media has warned of a possible trade war that the investigation could trigger, and Chinese authorities have pledged to take all appropriate measures to protect its rights and interests if needed. On Tuesday, a statement from China's Commerce Ministry called the move to launch a Section 301 investigation, quote, irresponsible, arguing it sends the wrong signal to the world. Beijing also predicted the move would be widely condemned. An online statement posted by an unnamed ministry spokesman said the United States' disregard of the World Trade Organization rules and use of domestic law to initiate a trade investigation against China is irresponsible, and its criticism of China is not objective. Prior to the establishment of the WTO, the United States used Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 to help open foreign markets. Such investigations were used frequently against Japan in the 1980s, but since the establishment of the WTO, it has been largely set aside. The United States has launched investigations since then, but has not used the powers it gives the president to unilaterally impose tariffs or other restrictions to protect American companies. How President Trump will use the results of the investigation is not clear. While most, including China, have focused on the possibility that he could ignore the WTO, that's not his only choice. Analysts say the investigation could also be used as leverage in negotiations, or the United States could join with other like-minded countries in trying to address China's market restrictions. Liao Chun, chief economist at China CITIC Bank International, said that while it will take a while to see the results of the investigation and the impact it might have on U.S.-bound Chinese exports, he thinks the push could eventually fail and likely trigger a trade war. But that's something that began a long time ago, some analysts like Robert Atkinson argue.
There is a trade war going on right now, and the Chinese are fighting it, and we're losing. So this notion that there's not a trade war, there is a trade war. There's been a trade war going on essentially since China joined the WTO.
Beijing appears to already have taken some steps to limit the potential impact of any action the United States could take. This year, China's State Council has twice announced new measures to reduce access restrictions for foreign investments. Its most recent announcement calls for draft roadmaps and timetables. Recently, China announced new reductions in its list of areas where investment is banned. That list has been getting shorter, but many barriers remain. Christopher Balding, an associate professor at Peking University's HSBC Business School, says China's recent approval of market access for Visa and MasterCard is one good example of just how difficult the Chinese market is to crack.
As part of the WTO agreement, they were supposed to be let into the Chinese market. The WTO agreement was in 2000, okay, and they're still trying to get into the Chinese market.
As for the investigation, a public hearing is scheduled for October, and the investigation could take months before any official response is announced. We thank VOA correspondent Bill Ide in Beijing for sending us this story. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Pakistan Army Chief refutes Trump accusations, stresses anti-terror effort. U.S. probe raises more talk of trade war with China. 10-year jail sentence sought for female Indonesian militant. Myanmar residents rate Suu Kyi government. Cambodia shutters independent radio, boots out U.S. NGO. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. And while you're online, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Japan has begun conducting a series of emergency drills in response to the perceived threat of a North Korean missile strike. Pyongyang has test-fired more than a dozen missiles into the Japan Sea this year, some landing inside Japan's economic zone. Many experts believe North Korea is on the brink of producing nuclear weapons. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Kobe, many Japanese fear that as an ally of the United States, Japan could be targeted by North Korea or get caught in the crossfire of any conflict.
Hidden in the forested hills of central Japan, Kenji Oribe has built what he believes will help him survive any nuclear conflict in East Asia. His construction company specializes in building underground shelters. With the rhetoric of war building in North Korea, Oribe has seen a big rise in demand.
The blast-proof doors, the escape hatches, and the machines like this air pump are all imported from Switzerland. Now there is a shortage of these components, and I have to ask my customers to wait a little.
The ventilator filters out noxious gases or radiation, giving its occupants long enough to survive the radiation following a nuclear attack. There are all the essentials for life underground.
With the atomic bombs that fell on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the radiation levels fell to 1,000th of the original level after 2 weeks, so it was safe to go outside.
Japan would have just 6 or 7 minutes warning of a missile attack launched from across the sea in North Korea. Few Japanese expect an imminent attack, but the country is preparing for the worst. Communities along the Japan Sea coast are carrying out evacuation drills. They fear a North Korean missile, either a test or fired in anger, could hit Japanese territory.
It is very scary. When I'm with my children, I can protect them, while I can't do anything if I'm at work and away from them. I'm afraid of that.
Japan is readying its so-called J-Alert system, a series of emergency messages relayed over loudspeakers, mobile phones, and computers. Missile defense systems have been deployed in western Japan. Some, like Kenji Oribe, aren't taking any chances. His shelter is partly a showcase for potential customers, but it's clear Oribe shares their concerns.
It is embarrassing that Japan was defeated 72 years ago and still has yet to take care of its own security. If there is a next war, I do not want to lose.
Safety like this doesn't come cheap. Uribe's customers pay around $165,000 for a shelter. His order book is filling fast. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Kobe, Japan.
Happening now in Asia, Typhoon Hato has left three dead in Macau Wednesday as it brought chaos and destruction to the enclave after sweeping through neighboring Hong Kong, where one man died there. The storm is making its way to China's mainland. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy anytime you can be with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Heat from deep within the earth is an underutilized source of renewable energy. The United States is the world's largest producer of geothermal energy, but that just makes up less than 1% of the nation's power generation. By contrast, geothermal plants in the Philippines and Iceland contribute around 30% of their electricity production. Now, Faith Lapidus tells us geothermal power is heating up in Australia.
Heat from the earth created natural hot springs around the world, which have long attracted people seeking relaxation and healing. Harnessing that heat can also warm and cool their homes. 20 years ago, Geoscience Australia in Canberra installed a large ground-source geothermal heating and cooling system, which keeps employees in the office comfortable at 22 degrees Celsius.
The system uses the earth at a constant temperature of about 17 or 18 degrees, down at 100 meters below the surface.
So in summer, we can cool the air temperature by rejecting heat into the ground. And in winter, we can pull that heat back out.
This sort of system is only efficient in climates with hot summers and chilly winters, like the Australian capital. It cuts down on electricity bills, but requires an expensive investment up front. Still, Tui Smith, who's been installing geothermal systems for years, says it's gaining popularity.
As more people are conscious about energy conservation and efficiencies and are building better houses, we're seeing a massive uptake.
As energy prices go up, so does demand for this ancient source of heat. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korean state media said Tuesday Pyongyang will launch an unspecified retaliation on the United States over the Ulchi Freedom Guardian drills that began Monday in South Korea. The military drills are held annually amid constant North Korean threats of attack. Share top stories and fun features every day from VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, reports that Chinese vessels came close to a major Philippine holding in the disputed South China Sea this month have touched off a tough debate in Manila that could disrupt a fragile year-old friendship between the two sides. Congressman Gary Alejano said on Facebook, a vessel from China planted a 3-meter-high flag on Sandy Cay, which lies in a Philippine-controlled area of the South China Sea's Spratly Islands, during or before the third week of July. He added Chinese naval and Coast Guard vessels passed near there on August 12. Images collected by the Asian Maritime Transparency Initiative under the U.S. think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies show 9 Chinese fishing ships and 2 naval or law enforcement vessels passing August 13th near Thitu, a Spratly feature occupied by more than 100 Filipino civilians. Yuan Graham, International Security Director with the Lowy Institute for International Policy in Sydney, says China could set up a soft blockade of the Cay and eventually put structures on it.
It might just be a way of testing the will of the Philippine government at the moment, just probing a response, what they can get away with, and also to see how much pushback there would be within the Philippines. But there's been very little pushback. Operationally, you could say the door is open for China if it wanted to go to the next stage.
Philippine domestic media reported Tuesday that President Rodrigo Duterte said he saw no reason to defend Sandy Cay unless China invades it. His foreign affairs head was quoted saying China was not occupying the Cay, which is within 22 kilometers of Thitu Island and often described as a sandbar, and that his department would give up no territory. But Antonio Carpio, a senior associate Supreme Court justice in the Philippines, has alleged a Chinese invasion. His comments have in part prompted the reactions from government officials. Duterte's government and China shelved their maritime disputes last year, and China pledged $24 billion in aid and investment to the Philippines. Neither side agreed to stop its activities in the South China Sea. Beijing is the strongest claimant among six with interests in the South China Sea and hopes its upbeat Philippine ties show it can manage maritime disputes without third-party intervention, according to scholars. In July 2016, a World Arbitration Court ruled that, at the request of the previous Philippine president, China's vast claim to about 90% of the 3.5 million square kilometer sea is legally invalid. Beijing disregarded that ruling. Vietnam has clashed with China over the sea since the 1970s as well. Since 2010, China has alarmed all claimants as well as Washington by stepping up land reclamation followed by military installations on some of the sea's larger islets. Claimants prize the sea for oil, gas, fisheries, and shipping lanes. And for now, analysts say the Philippine politicians struggling to come up with a response that satisfies China's suspicious public sentiment while maintaining with the friendship with Beijing. Eduardo Araral is associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School. He says China may pull back for now, and the Philippines might call the Chinese ambassador in for a discussion.
Since the Chinese knows that Justice Carpio is watching them, they cannot continue to insist doing what they're doing. They cannot be seen to be talking nicely and friendly to the Philippines and doing another thing on the backside.
Araral also says it's not clear whether any Chinese activity near Sandy Cay was organized by the central Chinese government or by a, quote, local bureaucrat. China embarrassed Duterte last year by parking vessels on Benam Rise, a submerged plateau on the Pacific Ocean side of the Philippines, prompting the president to come back with vows of strengthening control over its 10 Spratly Island holdings. The flap that came to light in April did not affect overall Sino-Philippine relations. Scholars like Oe Sun, international studies instructor at Singapore Nanyang University, say a lack of official resistance to Chinese activity at Sandy Cay could prompt China eventually to call the spot its own and restrict Philippine access.
Typically, what they would do is to sort of demarcate, for lack of a better term, a line of control or line of influence. When you do that, it's a form of claiming sovereignty, even just symbolically. By baby step, it would become a de facto Chinese control territory.
Oh adds a strong Philippine resistance of China's maritime activities could prompt Beijing to hold back investment in the Philippines. Duterte is looking to China and Japan to help fund railways and other new infrastructure through his six-year term. China already has installed combat aircraft infrastructure on the larger Spratly Island features of Fiery Cross, Mischief Reef, and Subi Reef. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, prosecutors on Wednesday said Dian Yulinovi, a female would-be suicide bomber, should spend 10 years in prison for plotting an attack in Indonesia's capital. She was arrested just one day before the planned bombing of a popular family attraction. This story and more is found on today's VOA 60. Check it out daily, along with VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an estimated 1.7 million people in the United States are living without a limb. While existing prosthetics allow amputees to regain some of their abilities, there are very few devices that provide sensory feedback for the users. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Houston, where researchers from Rice University, in conjunction with the University of Pisa and the Italian Institute of Technology, are working to allow amputees to better perceive what their prosthesis is doing.
A prosthetic hand is a critical tool that allows amputees to find normalcy in their lives. But some elements, such as the complete freedom of movement and sensations of touch, are not the same as a real hand.
They've come a long way and they have a long way to go. So.
Via Skype, Charity McFarland shows us the two different types of prosthesis she uses after losing her left hand in a car accident almost 4 years ago. McFarland volunteered to participate in research at Rice University for a smarter prosthetic hand to create what's called haptic devices to better replicate a biological hand for amputees.
Haptics is anything that has to do with the sense of touch. Any textures that you discern, or even the ability to realize that you're making contact with something, how much pressure you're putting on it, if it's slipping, all of those are haptic sensations.
Amputees test out this Rice haptic rocker that tries to create muscle sense.
So the rocker, as it moves back and forth, stretches the skin, and that amount of stretch would correlate to how open or closed the hand is.
Researchers found blindfolded test subjects were able to more than double their ability to distinguish the size of objects grasped with a prosthetic hand when they received haptic feedback from a skin stretch device. As for McFarland,
I still wasn't able to sense what it was doing completely.
This is going to be a long-term project, right, to create some sort of artificial hand that has the same capabilities. But maybe there are other changes in the short term that would also be appreciated.
Try to keep track of the haptic feedback.
For now, McFarland says she would appreciate a prosthesis that looks like a hand and allows the fingers to move and the wrists to bend and rotate just like a real hand. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
If you use a cell phone, you've probably had that moment when you realized there's no power left in your phone, or it was very close to running out. Now, researchers here in the United States have unveiled a prototype of a battery-free mobile phone, using technology they hope will eventually come to be integrated into mass-market products. The phone is the work of a group of researchers at the University of Washington in Seattle, and it works by harvesting tiny amounts of power from radio signals known as radio frequency or RF waves. VOA's George Pudich has details in this report by Kevin Enix.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm calling from a battery-free cell phone.
I can hear you pretty well.
It may not be quite on par with Alexander Graham Bell's discovery of phone technology, but these two University of Washington researchers say their breakthrough is a big deal.
This battery-free phone is a major leap in terms of the capabilities of battery-free devices, because now we have a streaming device that can continuously talk as well as receive data, which is basically a phone.
Don't cell phones use too much electricity to be able to run without batteries? Yes, they do.
If you look at a typical cell phone, it actually consumes about hundreds of milliwatts of power when it's doing voice calls, and it's impossible to actually make a device like that to be battery free. So what we did as a first challenge was to actually get that power number down by orders of magnitude.
Once they'd done that, they had a phone that could take advantage of the electromagnetic energy pulsing all around us in the form of radio frequency or RF waves.
Ambient RF waves are all around us. So as an example, your FM stations broadcast radio waves, your AM stations do that, your TV stations, your cell phone towers, they all are transmitting RF waves.
The phone literally feeds off all this ambient energy. You can't do all the things you can on your current smartphone, but it does mean even if your battery is dead, you're not stranded.
In the future, every smartphone would come with a battery-free mode where you can at least make a voice call when your battery is dead.
With this proof of concept behind them, the two researchers are now working on scaling up the product, allowing battery-free texting or web surfing.
We are really excited about this technology, and the University of Washington has an IP for this, and we are looking for avenues to basically commercialize and actually get this into people's hands and actually deploy this system more widely.
The team expects to have a product ready for the market in less than a year. For writer Kevin Enox, I'm George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Perhaps that means one day, while listening to VOA Asia, you can charge up your cell phone if you're near one of our many radio affiliates. We say hello to HELPS Radio at HELP University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and especially the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station. Thank you so much. We also thank Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jim Harmon, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, wishing you a great day.